Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Friday, June 10th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Had another nice day in gold today, up $550 on gold, $1,276. Silver's up 6 cents. At $1,739, platinum down 10 at $996, palladium down 16 at $548. It's interesting to see the division between gold and silver and the other two white metals. Those are some pretty big drops, with palladium being down almost 3%.
They are commodities. Gold and silver are monetary
exactly.
metals.
But what's interesting is the USDX today was also stronger, 0.46 at 94.56. So 2 days in a row, we've seen the dollar stronger with gold. So, again, gold is, I believe these are good signs to see that gold is breaking away and doing what it needs to do. Crude oil today was down 1.53, another good gold doing the opposite of crude oil, 49.03. So these are all great signs for gold. Paper markets today, they were down triple digits, but, last Friday they should have been down 500 to 1,000 points, but today it's down 119 on the Dow at 17,865. We have the NASDAQ down 64 at 48.94. The S&P was down 19 at 2,096. 10-year yield, 1.64%. Another year from now, that just might be negative too. But that was down 0.04. The euro, 1.13, down 5.1. Germany got whacked 2.5% overnight. London was down almost 2%. Asian markets were down as they were yesterday. But so our markets still fared a little bit better than the world markets, but certainly a lot of pressure. And, you can listen to any analyst. You can talk to any analyst. You can watch any financial news program, and everyone is expecting the same thing. Markets to go down, bond market to break, and we have some very serious problems here in this country. Certainly, they don't talk about just how serious it is. They certainly will sugarcoat it, but at least they're setting everybody or everyone who pays attention should be out there doing something to protect yourself. Gold certainly has become a it surprises me that they're certainly focusing on gold on the mainstream financial news programs, and there's more and more push, more and more higher pricing coming into gold, and certainly with what's happening in England with the Brexit, and we talked about it yesterday, the buying in London certainly has picked up significantly as everyone is preparing for the perhaps exit from the European Union out of England. So, as I said yesterday, Al, you know, people wait until something happens before they move.
I can give you one guy who doesn't wait. George Soros.
Well, I don't even include him.
I get that, but there's a point to this. There's a point to this.
I know your point. I get it.
There's a point is he's not waiting, all right? Soros went out, and just recently he sold off 37% of his stocks. He's got a $30 billion portfolio, and he sold off 37% of his stock and put a good chunk of that into gold.
He did.
All right? Now, he's not waiting to say, oh, gee, what'll happen? What's going to happen? And there's an article in the Wall Street Journal. Soros has essentially come out of retirement to oversee the trade because he thinks there are a lot of profits to be made. All right? He's moving. He's not going to wait. He's not going to get all caught after the fact. And it's part of the reason why he's a billionaire in the first place. He's not hesitating and pussyfooting around, saying, I don't know, to be or not to be.
Yeah.
He's not playing Hamlet. He's jumping right in with both feet. He's one of his comments. He's concerned about China, massive world deflation, the end of the European Union. He says we are repeating 2008. He says that the trouble in China could cause massive deflation around the world. He also thinks it's possible that the growing refugee crisis in Europe will lead to the collapse of the euro. All right? That would trigger a massive recession in Europe and cause significant political unrest, according to the article I'm reading from. And here's Soros' last comment. He says the world is running into something that it doesn't know how to handle. All right? I think he's correct.
He is.
What do you do when you run into something you don't know how to handle? You're going to go to some kind of safety if you're sensible. And I think this is why Soros sold off 37% of his stock, and he's buying gold.
Well,
now, I don't necessarily agree with his strategy, because much of what he's buying is electronic ETF funds and the rest of that sort of thing. He's buying paper gold.
Yeah.
But just the same. He can see that gold is going up, and he can see that the stocks are going down, or at least that's the assumption he's operating on right now. You know, multi-billionaire, you have to give credit. You got to say this guy might know what he's doing, and he's not hesitating. That's my point.
I get that. I also know he sets up markets. He changes countries just like he did what he did when he made his big money on the pound. And he could very well be doing the same thing with the euro, with the comment that and that's what he does. He goes out and he plants seeds, and so you very well could see the euro drop. But I think that'll be mainly because you have if England does pull out of the eurozone, yeah, you have. I think Scotland's up for another. You have elections in Spain, and they want to secede from the they want to break Spain up. Yeah, I mean, so there's a lot of things that are going on that if this does happen, and we'll have to wait and see if it does. It seems like every attempt.
That's another one of the points on all of this. No one knows what's going to happen. No one knows when it's going to happen. But anyone who looks at this can see there are so many possibilities.
And they're not all, and none of them are good.
That's the problem. It's hard to, you can find a bunch of clouds, but look, where are the silver linings? And they're not easily identified. And there's so many problems that are building up and building up, and the euro and China and the United States and the dollar and blah, blah, blah. It's one of those things where you pretty much have to say, you know, the odds are we're going to see a serious problem, just because there are so many potentially serious problems that are right here, right next to us right now. So what do you do? If you don't know, Soros made the comment, the world is approaching something that it doesn't understand. What do you do? If the world, if he's right about that, and you don't understand, then again, you're going to have to make a decision. Say something strange is going to happen. What's the best way to protect myself? Stocks? Bonds? Paper debt instruments issued by governments that are so overly indebted they'll never be able to pay their bills? Or something that the world has treasured for 3,000-4,000 years? I mean, in the face of, no one knows exactly what to do under these circumstances, but odds are gold is your best bet. And Mr. Soros apparently agrees with that, or he's at least tempted by that idea, and he's moving, what, maybe $10 billion in stocks into gold?
You know what's, I was reading, and I talked about this yesterday when you were playing hooky on Thursday. Anyway, when we have $10 trillion of bonds that are in negative rate territory, to me, that's staggering. Maybe it isn't compared to everything else. But to me, $10 trillion in negative, paying negative rates, yields, that to me, I think, is the one of the problems. And yet everyone is hiding in treasuries. Everyone's going to treasuries.
And this is like, a safety.
This is a safety. And it just amazes me.
It's like jumping off the Titanic in order to get into a lifeboat that has already got a hole in the bottom of it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not the best choice you can make.
It's insane.
It is. And why? Because the government is, the governments are typically, certainly the United States government, is badly indebted, overly indebted. It can't pay all of its bills right now. If more people go into bonds or the government issues more bonds, they're not going to get paid off.
No.
In total. Some of them might, but most of them won't.
What better way to steal your money? What better way to steal your money and then blame you because that was just your investment? Oh, we're not going to pay it. I mean, anyway. Bonds are off to their best start to a year since 1997.
Yep.
And it's just...
But while people are looking for security.
Yeah.
And that's why bonds are doing...
And where they really need to go.
Which means they think there's going to be trouble.
Yeah.
That's why they're buying bonds, because they think there's going to be trouble and they're looking for a safe place to place their investments. And I'm unable to understand. I mean, I can see that in specific countries and specific bonds, all right, maybe there's something extraordinary about them, but most of them, I don't see it. I'm not able to understand it. I mean, and I wonder, how is it that people are so conditioned to, no matter what they do, put their wealth into some sort of a paper debt instrument rather than something.
I never understood that, Al.
Have been conditioned to the point, under these circumstances, for safety, you go to bonds. Really?
Why would you give your money to the government? I don't care whether. I just would never give my money to the government. Anyway.
Yeah, you were talking about negative interest rates. Here's an article from the Financial Times. It says negative interest rates stir bank mutiny.
Yeah,
lenders in Europe and Japan are rebelling against their central bank's negative interest rate policies, with one big German group going so far as to waste storing excess deposits in vaults. The move by Commerzbank, and that's German, to consider stashing cash in costly deposit boxes instead of keeping it with the European Central Bank came at the same time as Tokyo's biggest financial group warned that it was posed to quit the 22-member club of primary dealers for Japanese sovereign debt. Well, the article goes on, but the point is, negative interest rates, we look at them, the average person looks at negative interest rates and says, that's crazy. But it doesn't usually affect individuals directly. I doubt that many of us have actually been exposed personally to negative interest rates, but banks are. I'm not talking about the central banks. I'm talking about conventional banks that come in and park their money in the banks, in the central banks, overnight. Well, they have to pay to park it there, right? That's negative interest rate. It's like saying if I lend you $1 million, you're going to charge me $10,000 to accept my loan. The creditors are being damaged. They are being impoverished. They are being wiped out. And the creditors, in the end, are the people we really need in this country. And I'm not talking about big banks. I'm not talking about Wall Street. But I'm talking about people who produce more than they consume. Those are people who are saving money, and ultimately they are the creditors that provide revenue to be borrowed by other people. They produce more than they consume. And you have to respect that. You can't go out and say, oh, we have to respect the consumers. No, we don't. The consumers are eating more than they grow. That can't last. It can't work. You got, if you want this country to be prosperous, if you want it to be powerful, if you even want it to be free, you've got to do what you can to support and respect the creditors, the producers. Again, when I say creditors, I know people think, oh, he's advocating that we have to do what's good things for the bankers. I'm not talking about bankers. Just collect the extra funds that have been produced by the producers, the people who produce more than they consume. The bankers wind up with it. But it's the producers that have to be preserved, and we run out of those. Those are the people. It's like killing all the farmers. Right? Just think, if we killed all the farmers, we could get the food for nothing. Well, yeah, maybe, for this season. But as soon as we finished eating all the cows and the grain and the corn and whatever other plants and vegetables, all of a sudden we wouldn't have any food. And who's going to grow it? Everybody's going to say, do you know how to grow food? Do you know how to, any farmers around here? No. You know, this is killing the golden goose. When you devise an economy that favors consumers, we have an economy that's, oh, the consumer-based economy. Listen, that's just stupid. If you want this country to be strong and prosperous, we have to have a producer-based economy. And when I'm talking about producers, I'm not talking about the big corporations. They're just hustlers and con artists, most of them. But there's got to be a way where ordinary people who are able to produce more than they consume, they have to be respected, encouraged, preserved. And we're not doing that with negative interest rates, because negative interest rates ultimately are being applied against the productive and used to subsidize the non-productive, the consumers. A lot of consumers out there. Everybody's a consumer, really. I mean, everyone does, but everyone consumes things. But not everyone produces things, and they're the ones that have to be protected. They're the ones that have to be respected. And maybe they're just the ones that have to be left alone, because typically they're strong enough where they can handle things on their own if the government get off their back. But in any case, negative interest rates, and this article is saying the banks are beginning to rebel. They're tired of paying negative interest rates. Bank of Japan, European Central Bank. The idea behind negative interest rates is these are an attempt to push lenders, that is to say conventional banks, to deploy their cash in the real economy through more aggressive lending to businesses. Well, maybe the banks aren't all that interested in lending. Maybe they're looking at the economy and they're saying, uh-oh, this whole thing's going to go south, and when it does, I don't want to be lending all of my capital to a bunch of people who can't pay it back.
It's costing me.
Yeah.
And in the long run, it's costing me.
So the point behind the article is that we are beginning to see a kind of fragmentation, a division between the central banks and the private banks. And the private banks are saying, look, we don't want to, we can't pay these negative interest rates. Are you crazy? It's kind of just an anomaly for ordinary people. It's negative interest rates. That's strange. You, for a bank that has to pay negative interest rates are destructive. So we'll see how it works out. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I'm finally, all that silver. We went through a ton of silver, 90% silver with all those $50 face value, 90% silver bags that we were selling on special for $670. I think I got 3 left. Out of all of those that we sold, and we did sell a ton of them. So 670 is before silver's gone up to this higher number. So you're getting a real good deal on your 90% silver, and it includes your shipping costs. Got about 3 bags left, so give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Visit the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And we're going to be adding the mailing address to the new location on the website, and also with our newsletter. We've been posting, I think it's on the website also, second location down in Maryland, Berlin, Maryland, that mailing address. All funds will still be going to Pennsylvania, but if anybody wants to jot me a line, they may do so at P.O. Box 276. Berlin, Maryland, 21811. So that'll be posted, and I wanted to make that announcement. And but right now, all funds are still going through the Pennsylvania office. No changes. You will see in anything in our services. So we're excited to be doing this. So I wanted to talk to you, Al, or make
you
a mention. Well, I wanted to tell you.
Am I going to get is this another one of the
know.
April Fool's things you're going to try on me?
No, but I think I think perhaps I need to perhaps fool you one of these days to see if you really can, just to see if I can complete.
Well, we know that you can. I get fooled by you a lot of
times.
Yeah,
but yes, I know, but you're...
It's embarrassing, too. It's really...
But you've been paying a little bit more attention.
You're like Charlie Brown with Lucy. You understand that? You're going to hold the football. Come on, Charlie, kick the football. I feel that's just the way it works, and every single April Fool's, it's the same thing.
And then some. Oh, Lucy. Hey, the U.S. government's budget deficit, hey, it expanded in May, Al.
Gee, there's a surprise.
There's a surprise. A rise in spending, a decline in corporate profits that they're blaming. Their revenues exceeded, the federal spending exceeded revenues by $53 billion in May. They said this as a monthly update today, the Treasury Department. Over the past year, the deficit totaled $479 billion, up 16% from a year earlier. And of course, they say the main factor is weaker government tax revenue. The longer term.
Where's the money coming from?
Or where it's not coming from?
It's not coming from tax revenue. It's not coming from the productive elements of society, and that's where it should be coming from, and it's not. And you look at it and you think about it and you say, then it's borrowing. So that's what they're doing. They're borrowing in order to spend more money at a time when they're already so deeply in debt, they'll never pay off the entire national debt. How is this going to work out? You know, this is one of those things where you sit back and they smile and they look at you and they appear to be confident and the rest of that sort of thing. I look at them and I think they're a bunch of frauds.
Yep.
They have to know this thing is about to blow up in front of everybody. And when I say about, I don't necessarily mean next week or next month, but I don't know, within a couple of years.
I'm not even so sure anymore. You know, we often say in election years, they try to keep things quiet and smooth to get who they want and elected and so forth. But this has been anything but a normal election year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I
think that reflects the public understands that we're on the verge of some serious trouble.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be able to understand why. They've got an intuitive grasp that something's going on here, and the people in charge have put us in a dangerous position, and therefore we are going to vote for people who are not establishment people, Bernie Sanders being one and Donald Trump particularly being the other. The establishment has caused great harm to this country, whatever the establishment is, and people getting super rich, and people who have a certain amount of arrogance, who think they're competent to actually manage this whole economy and tell us all what to do, and they're not. Right? Ben Bernanke, Janet Yellen, Alan Greenspan. Yeah, they look like they know what they're doing, but the truth is they've just made it worse and worse and worse, and we could have had a recession a couple of years ago. We could have it right now. We could have had a different. They try. The politicians don't want the recession to impact voting. So they try to put it off so they can get reelected. And they do whatever they can. But the problem is, if you put the recession off, you're due for a recession. But the politicians say, no, it's bad politics. No recession. We've got to do anything we can to stop it. Borrow some money. Stimulate the economy. Okay, borrow them some money. Stimulate the economy, but you're going deeper into debt. And all you're doing is guaranteeing that when the stuff finally hits the fan, you're not going to have a recession. You're going to have a depression. Right? The longer you put it off, you could take your medicine. It's like going out and getting drunk and having a hangover the next day. It's not fun. The hangover is not fun. All right? Takes all the fun out of being a drunk when you have a hangover. But if you take the hangover the day after you got drunk, you can get on with your life. If you make sure, if you want to avoid the hangover, you got to go out and get drunk again. And then you avoid the hangover again and again and again. And all next thing you know, you've spent a couple of years of your life as an alcoholic. You got to take that hangover. It's part of the cure. I think it's the same thing with recessions, and we have a government that says, oh, no, we can't have recessions. I think it's part of a cure. I think it's part of a natural cycle that, in a sense, purges the stupidity out of the system. We do stupid things, and if we have to pay for them periodically, it teaches us a lesson. And it also cleans us. You know, we go through a kind of purge, and we get, oh, we got the BS out of our system, and now we can function normally for a while. And we'll have more BS later on, and then take your medicine, purge, get on with your life. So in any case, I'm just looking at this and the whole thing. It's just, everybody can see this. Everybody knows this. They may not be able to articulate reasons exactly, but they understand. They got a grasp. And that's why we see the Trump phenomenon, the Bernie Sanders phenomenon. Just unimaginable. How? Just imagine this. 2 years ago, if someone said we're going to have a billionaire Republican nominated for president who's never held political office before, and we're going to have a socialist, an openly avowed socialist, come close to winning the nomination for the Democratic Party. People say, you're crazy, you know, but here we are. It's a reflection that the public understands and they're concerned. They may not know what to do, but they're looking for somebody, and they know there are some people that just aren't going to solve the problem. They're really not helping. They're making it worse. And I don't know. You're just coming to that day of reckoning. So buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. And again, if you agree with that analysis or that, you know, that opinion, you got to protect yourself as best you can. So.
And, you know, and I think sometimes, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on gold and silver at this point, but, you know, people call, they want to buy things for barter and so forth. But you know what? Buying gold and silver is much more about just buying things. It's protecting your wealth, your livelihood. And so, you know, it's, and there's so many mixed messages out there. And yes, I know, I stress fundamentals and so forth. It's much bigger than just out there buying something. And again, it comes to what's suitable for each and every one of you. And that's what we do here at Discount Gold and Silver. We're here to help you understand what gold and silver does, why you would want to take your money out of your banks and buy gold and silver, why you don't want to keep your money sitting there in the bank when you could protect it by gold and silver, why you should take everything out of the bank and buy gold and silver. That's what we're here for, to help you understand that. That it is as important as buying for bartering and buying things like the $50 face value of 90% silver. That's very important, and we can't forget about that. But gold and silver is going to play a much bigger part, and it should, in your portfolio. And, you know.
Well, you know, the reason it hasn't played a big part in the portfolio is because it has been intentionally manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they took gold out of circulation in the domestic economy back in 1933, what was that all about? That was a gross just theft by the government. They didn't want us. It was inconvenient for government to run this country on the basis of a gold or silver backed currency, which is essentially mandated by Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the Constitution. It says no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. All right? The states of the Union have to use gold and silver. By Constitution, it hasn't been changed. They took the gold out. They took the silver out. What happened to the states of the Union? Right now, if you're trying to do business, if you are in the venue of a state of the union, and the Constitution still says no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin, a tender in payment of debts, how do you function? And if you can't, if we don't have gold and silver, how do the states function? What passes for government today at the state level, is it really government of a state of the union, which is mandated by Constitution to use gold and silver coin? Or is it some other kind of state? Has the government foisted something crazy, a different plane, a different venue off on us? And I know how crazy that idea sounds to most people, but I can tell you, when you think about Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, of the Constitution of the United States. You think about that, there's only two explanations for what's happening right now. Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 says no state. They mean no state of the union because that's the only kind of state they had when the Constitution was adopted back in 1789. By the 1788, by the, ratified by the people in 1788. States of the union had to use gold or silver coin. Unfortunately, they never said that the territories had to use gold and silver coin. They never said the districts like Washington, D.C. had to use gold and silver coin. They only said the states of the Union. Our government pulled the gold out. They pulled the silver out. How does the state of the Union, a government of the state of the Union, how does it impose fines, taxes, penalties, pay its help? How can they do that without gold and silver and without acting in a way that's unconstitutional? The point to this is, if your state government is not acting, is not paying its bills or imposing fines and taxes or whatever, if they're not transacting in gold or silver, they're violating Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the Constitution. It's still there. It's never been repealed. If they're acting unconstitutionally, if they're states of the Union. In the alternative, if they're not acting unconstitutionally, then they must be something other than states of the Union. As nutty as that sounds, there are only two possibilities. If they're states of the Union and they're not using gold and silver, they're in violation of Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1. If they're not in violation of Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, they're something other than states of the Union. Because the Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 only applies to the states of the Union. Now, that's confusing, I'm sure, and it's the sort of thing that, you know, I can try to explain it for hours and perhaps not succeed, but there is something to be learned here if you make the effort. Our fundamental political structure has been altered by simply removing gold and silver coin from domestic circulation. And we are now at the point, and we've gone, and when we had gold and silver coin, we were the wealthiest nation on earth. Now we're the world's biggest debtor. How do you think that's going to work out? When I was a kid, when I was a little boy, this was the wealthiest nation on earth. We had something like 7 out of the 10 biggest banks in the world were here in the United States of America. Today, I don't know how many are left of the biggest. I don't know how many we have that are in the top 10. It might be 2 or 3, and maybe it's none. I don't know what it is. But it's not 7 or 8. And again, we've gone from richest country in my lifetime to the most indebted. And it's happened while we didn't have gold and silver. You know, people get this. Most people, the only thing they understand about money is how to count it. Look, I've got a $10 bill. I got a $100 bill. We understand how to count the money, but people don't understand the significance of what that money means and what the nature of that money implies or perhaps mandates. You're dealing with just a fiat currency? You've got a problem. It always fails. It always leaves nations in a kind of disaster. It always happens. And yet, the treasonous whores in the cat house on the Potomac, they said, I know, let's have a fiat currency. And we'll leave the mess. Yeah, it'll cause a mess, but it'll be a couple of generations before we get to it. And we can get rich in the meantime. That fiat currency has hurt this country perhaps more than anything else, more than Pearl Harbor. Right? Certainly more than 9/11 attacks. You know, and more than any number of politicians we've had in public office and whatever treachery they've been up to, that currency replacing the gold and silver has caused us great harm. And we haven't seen that harm yet, but it's coming at us. Also coming at us are some more commercials. Melody and I are going to listen to them, as will you. And Melody and I will be returning in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
PSA count high, half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 for international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We're back. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
What movie was that? We're here.
No, that's Poltergeist.
Poltergeist. Well, the House passes Puerto Rico's rescue. This was last night, and it passed 297 to 127. Both Ryan and Pelosi, of course, pushed the package. And they were together urging support for this legislation. Ryan made a moral case for the bill. So it now heads to the Senate. And I'm not quite sure when they'll need to get through it. I guess it's – well, they have a critical payment that's due July 1st. So they got a month. And the island faces a default on a $2 billion worth of debt payments on July 1st. And so, you know, it is something that will be approved, I believe. I was reading last week that not only do you have Puerto Rico, but you also have the U.S. Virgin Islands that are in that to the point that where they can't pay their debts. Neither place can file bankruptcy. But what's interesting, there was an audit report that suggested that Puerto Rico might be able to avoid some of its borrowing because politicians exceeded the constitutional debt limits and their own authority. It was shared with Market Watch, and it states that some of Puerto Rico's debts may have been issued illegally, allowing the government to potentially declare the bonds invalid and courts to then decide the creditors' claims are unenforceable. So I think that's interesting.
No, it's really interesting.
It is. And what also is Puerto Rico's governor, the money for those debt payments is not in the proposed budget.
Yep.
So he's not planning on paying for it. And what he said, what he told reporters at a news conference, this is simple. Either we pay Wall Street or we pay Puerto Ricans. If the legislature decides we pay Wall Street more, well, each has his responsibility. I will continue defending Puerto Ricans. Money I send to Wall Street, I do not have to provide services here. So, you know, with that, you know the U.S., you know the Senate will approve it, and they'll get their bailout.
And Wall Street will get their money. Mm-hmm. So, and that's probably what's going on here, although I don't know that for a fact. Oh, my gosh, Puerto Rico's going broke. Nobody cares. Oh, my gosh, Puerto Rico's going broke, and they won't send their money to Wall Street. Now they care.
This
is serious. We got to take care. We don't have to worry about the Puerto Ricans, but we do have to worry about the people who work on Wall Street.
You betcha.
I understand.
And Virgin Islands will be the same. So
thing is, you know, Brazil is in a lot of trouble. Argentina's been in trouble. Uruguay's on the edge of trouble. European Union is on the edge of trouble. China is on the edge of trouble. India's probably always in trouble. Africa's always in trouble. And we are here bailing out Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, and there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. But I just wonder who's going to bail us out.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to bail us out when the time comes? And it's going to come. Right? Debt is too big to be repaid. I said it 100 times on this program, but that's the problem. You know, you talk a little about Keynesian economics. People blame John Maynard Keynes and his economic theories for the trouble we're having in the world right now. They say, oh, Keynesian economics has been crazy. It's a failure, and we should, you know, we've got to do something about Keynesian economics. That's not true. They talk about Keynesian economics, but they've never really applied it. Keynesian economics, simply John Maynard Keynes, and I'm not advocating Keynesian economics, but I'm just saying it's never really been tried. It's only been blamed. Here's what Keynes wanted to do. He was familiar with the business cycle, which is like a sine wave. It goes up for a while. When we get to some irrational exuberance, it may spike, and then it falls down into a depression. And then it slowly builds back up to another irrational spike, and then it falls down into another depression, or at least a recession. And it goes up and down, back and forth. It's like a yo-yo business cycle, all right? When people are extremely greedy, it goes up. It's driven by greed, and it goes to irrational heights. And then, because they're rational, it falls back down, and it goes to a depression because people are motivated by fear. They are primarily motivated by fear, and it takes us down into a depression, which may be irrationally pessimistic. What Keynes wanted to do was to moderate the business cycle from where we had fairly sharp peaks and troughs to where we had, they were moderated, right? The waves were essentially would be calmed. And what he proposed was this. When we are in a portion of the business cycle where things are rising, the economy's getting hotter, we're making more money, everybody's greedy, we're going to make a bunch of money, I'm going to make a killing, I'm going to get rich, and rest, that sort of thing. We go nuts, all right? And we're going, he says, now's the time, in the midst of that economic boom, you raise taxes, and it slows the boom, all right? Raise taxes and the economy slows down, and instead of going to irrational heights, which will cause trouble, we go to moderate heights. And then when the business cycle continues to function, and we will also start to go into another trough, another valley, another maybe a depression. And what he said, the tax revenue that was generated while the sine wave was going up, you save that money, raise the money, increase the taxes when the times are, when we have boom times, essentially, the economy is hot, raise the taxes and save the tax revenue until the economy inevitably goes into that trough, that decline, that recession, or maybe even a depression. And then you use the savings, the money that you taxed when it was going too high, you kept that money as savings, and you have that savings to spend when you go into the trough. And that saved revenue is the money that will, in theory, minimize the whatever damage comes from that trough, that recession, that you know, that depression in the sine wave. So, not a bad idea. I mean, Keynes just saying, look, raise taxes when things are good so you got money because things are going to get bad. That sine wave just keeps on functioning, up and down, up and down. But you can mitigate and make things, instead of going into a painful depression, you can have a mild recession. And then things start building up again, and rather than going to irrational heights, we can moderate, and that was his idea. And the government said, that's a great idea. We will raise taxes when things are good, right? But they didn't save the money. They didn't save it. They said, why should we save it when we can borrow it? We can use all this money we got from the good times, and we can spend it on important things like increasing welfare or increasing government subsidies or by engaging in wars in Iraq and Afghanistan or wherever else we want to fight. We got extra money. Let's spend it. They didn't save. Government didn't save. And the whole thing, they said, and when we need, now we need money. We've gone through our economic high. We've taxed, we've increased money, we've invaded a few countries, and now we're going into our economic low cycle on the business cycle. We're going down into that trough. So how are we going to stimulate our way out? We'll borrow the money and go deeper into debt. Well, there is where they abandoned. They didn't follow Keynesians, John Maynard Keynes. They didn't follow his theory. His theory: raise the money, the revenue, while you're doing well. Apply, save it until you do badly, and spend it then. Government doesn't save. Government spends money like John Belushi at a toga party. You understand? They're going to just drink everything they can, do all the drugs they can find, and run wild. Well, so my point is, people blame Keynesian economics for the trouble we've had. Well, it's not a fair rap. We haven't really tried Keynesian economics. Keynesian economics said tax during the good times, save the money, spend the money, we wouldn't have to go into debt. But instead, government said, we'll tax it, we'll spend it on something like a new B-52 bomber or something like that, new stealth bomber. Go to war, we can waste the money in 100 different ways, but then we will borrow rather than spend revenue. And ultimately, you can't keep borrowing your way out of an economic recession. Sooner or later, the credit dries up, and you don't have any money to support to stimulate the economy, and the whole thing goes boom. It implodes, and everybody screams and shouts, and some of them will blame John Maynard Keynes and Keynesian economics. And it's not Keynes. It's the government that didn't save the tax revenues. They'd saved it, we wouldn't have to borrow. That's the theory. So in any case, when people start telling you that John Maynard Keynes and his Keynesian economics, it wasn't a bad idea. I don't know that it would have worked. I'm not here to advocate it. But it actually seems plausible. But the government never implemented. They said, yeah, we'll raise the money when we get a chance. We'll spend it just as fast as it comes through the door. One of the most important things you can spend money on is growing government, making government bigger and more powerful. You don't have to worry about the next recession. We're making a bigger, build a better bureaucracy, and the government will beat a path to your doorstep, something like that. It's government that messed this up. It's not John Maynard Keynes. His theory might have worked. It may have worked wonderfully. It may not. I don't know if it's good or bad, but he's not the one that messed things up because they never implemented his theory. What do we got left, Melody? Here's one. Here's one that's worth mentioning. Here's from Business Insider. It says Elizabeth Warren has considered the idea of serving as Hillary Clinton's running mate, but she sees some big obstacles. U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, who is 66 years old, has considered the idea of serving as Hillary Clinton's running mate. Clinton, of course, is 68 years old. However, several people familiar with Warren's thinking told Reuters that Warren sees obstacles to that choice as she prepares to endorse the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee. She has endorsed, since this article was written, she has endorsed Mrs. Clinton. And, So we have the possibility that the Democrats are giving some serious consideration to nominating two women. Not just one woman to be president, but a woman to be president and a woman to be vice president.
Well, that's one way to lose.
Well, I don't know whether it is or not. I mean, the idea behind it, women are 53% of the electorate. The intent, I think, is to get all the women in the country to vote, outvote the men. And maybe that'll work and maybe it won't. All right? What I'm thinking is this. You know, if we can get two women running for the Democrat Party.
No, I can't wait.
I think we can get rid of the jackass, you know, the symbol of the Democrat Party. Some call it a donkey.
Donkey.
I call it a jackass. I don't know what the difference is between them, but I'm thinking we could get rid of the Democrat jackass, and we could change it to the hen party. Melody, right? We got two hens running. We could have wilting bees and bake sales.
You're just as bad. You just had to get me a little fired up here at the end.
Right,
you know?
At the end, yes. I didn't.
But
give
you know what? I'd rather be a hen than a jackass.
Well, I'm not a jackass. At least I'm not a Democrat. But we could raise money instead of going to fat cats to raise money for we could hold bake sales.
You know what? I mean, I'm not very fond of either or, but, I could think of a little bit better.
No, but I couldn't.
And yeah, I know you couldn't, but that just exposes your view.
This is just getting even for
and I think you better be out of time before I say something that we shouldn't or I shouldn't.
Well, you got about 60 seconds left.
Oh, no, that's plenty of time to get me in trouble. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Give us a call, folks. We got some great prices, not only on just 90% silver, but we got some great coin prices. Fractional pieces, 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagles, far better than any gram that you can buy. For your IRA precious metals, give us a call. We'll get you the truth, and you can be legal about it and not have to worry about someone breathing down your neck. But always try and take physical delivery of your gold and silver first. And, again, if you can pull your funds out of your IRA and purchase gold and take physical delivery, that's the best thing that you can do. So give us a call. Visit our website, dgscoins.com.
Okay, folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom, and we may discuss the hen party more in the future, or maybe not. We'll watch and see.
Maybe
Thanks
not.
For listening. We'll be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. Got me a wealthy man. I wouldn't have to work at all.